This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, July 14th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adelaide Jr. Joining me is twitch.tv/AndyCortez.
Good morning, Bless. No, great morning.
Great morning. You know why? Because we got that low key. We got that low key, that new low key, man. How you feeling about it?
Oh, my
gosh. No spoilers, of course.
We just finished talking about it. Amazing. Very, very happy with it, Bless. My favorite series, my favorite Marvel series so far.
Yeah. The exact same here, my favorite Marvel show. It was one of the ones where throughout the whole season, I've not done the thing where I've stayed up to watch the Loki premiere at midnight because I'm usually on KFUD on Wednesday mornings and I don't want to stay up too late because I know I gotta be on it in the morning. I gotta be ready for KFUD. I can't be too tired here. You know, All I got is this iced coffee and that can only do so much. But for this last episode, I did it. I was like, you know what, man, fuck it. It's the finale. Shit's going to pop off.
You made the right call.
I'm going to stay up. I'm going to watch it. And Kevin, I did make the right call because, oh my God. Oh my God.
And then I stayed up. And then I stayed up until like 3 a.m. I was telling Kevin. I just couldn't fall asleep.
Same.
Oh my God.
Was it just the fact that you were thinking about the episode? Because that's what did it for me. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
That was the gateway drug. And then it led into just being on TikTok and not being able to fall asleep, you know, the usual.
I feel that. Of course, we have our Loki review under Kind of Funny Reacts. Go check that out. But for now, let's talk about some video game news because today's stories include headlines from our Phil Spencer interview, Battlefield 2042 getting crossplay, and more because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunny, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in, and silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, a new Gamescast is up right now, and it's us being joined by head of Xbox, Phil Spencer. We dive into a bunch of different stuff, some even being news items on the show, which we'll get to in a second, and I implore everyone, go check out that episode because it's overall a very good time. We even get Phil Spencer to play a short game of Bless Who, and it's a magnificent time.
You can check that
out. A lot of fun. You can check that out on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on the Gamescast podcast feed. Like I said earlier, our Loki season finale reactions, they just got done recording. That should be up on YouTube and podcast services by the time you're listening to this episode later on YouTube and podcast services. So make sure to watch the Loki finale. Check that out if you want to know all the thoughts from the whole crew. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Donovan Harkness and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by DoorDash, Full Sail, and Omen, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have seven stories today. A lengthy Roper Report, all kicking off with what I'm going to call newsception, because it's news that we broke from Kind of Funny, which we usually don't do. Right, it's that rare occurrence where we had on Phil Spencer on Gamescast yesterday. It was a great time. He talked about all sorts of stuff, and even after the episode, I think it was Tim who was like, "Man, I'm surprised about how candid he was," and he was actually saying some interesting things. And it was fun to wake up this morning and see multiple headlines.
Was
come
it the
out
big Psychonauts news interview. That I broke?
Yeah, it was the big Psychonauts, of course. Phil Spencer. What was it, Andy?
Well, so Phil Spencer, we start off the show, and he's mentioning that he'd been playing Psychonauts 2, and then he said, you know what, but it was a dev build, and I want to wait for the actual game to come out, to which, you connect the dots, and it's obvious that the game is in a completely broken state, and he doesn't want to play a very broken dev build. I'm hearing there's a lot of turmoil at the studio. Yeah. Bless.
Double Fine is in shambles right now.
Double Fine is not doing great. So sorry, Tim Schafer.
Yeah, here they're gonna pivot from doing Psychonauts to Broken Age 2.
Making things up.
you gotta listen to the episode if you want to get the real news. Oh, but obviously that was a joke because we started out the show and Phil Spencer, fantastic dude, is like, hey, ask me about anything. I'm pretty open to whatever. And you know, Phil's made sort of the rounds on all these podcasts and he's been breaking news and there have been a lot of headlines from other podcasts and it's like, I don't really want to ask the same questions, right? You know, you don't want to sort of get repetitive and start asking sort of the same things. But Phil, feel free to break any news that you want, right? Feel free to like get kind of funny in the headlines. And I was trying to just make news wherever I could. I asked him about Elden Ring. He didn't give me much, unfortunately.
But he has played it. He has played it, is what he said.
He has played
Which
it.
Which was that? Was that already known that he's played Elden Ring? Was that an actual thing?
It was, yeah. But I just really wanted to have the questioning be, hey, Phil, so you've played Elden Ring, right? Yes, I have. That's pretty cool. That's all it was. That's all it was, Kevin.
Yeah, Phil was great. And Phil was out here breaking news for free. So let's start off with story number one. Phil Spencer suggests that Xbox could update its controller. This is from Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Xbox head Phil Spencer has complimented PlayStation's DualSense controller and suggested that it might inspire Microsoft to add its features to its own controller. Microsoft stuck to a familiar design for its Xbox Series X/S pads, only making minor changes to its design and the under-the-hood improvements. In comparison, Sony opted to totally redesign its controller with new features such as haptic feedback and adaptive triggers. Speaking as part of the latest Kinda Funny Games cast, Phil Spencer said that Xbox probably wouldn't release any major bespoke accessories such as VR headsets in the near future, but suggested that an updated controller was far more likely to happen. Quote, when I think about our hardware roadmap, I really love the evolution of Liz Hamron's team and the work that they've done, he said. Quote, we're definitely thinking about different kinds of devices that can bring more games to more places. There's probably some work that we'll do on the controller. I think Sony's done a nice job with their controller, and we kind of look at some of that and think there are things that we should go do. But we're probably not in the more bespoke accessories place right now. We just look at what happens on Windows and other places and see if there's a unique opportunity for us. Right now, I don't think there's anything that's obvious to me. End quote. Earlier this year, Microsoft used a customer experience survey to ask Xbox Series X/S owners if they would like to see any PlayStation controller features made available for its consoles. So this is a thing that we've known Xbox has thought at least a little bit about in the past from these surveys. But the fact that Phil Spencer just came right out and said it, right? That like, hey, yeah, we like what the DualSense is doing. And it could be cool to implement some of those features in what we're doing. Andy, is that a good thing for you? Do you like that line of thinking?
I mean, it's not only do I love the line of thinking, I just love how open he is about it. Like, yeah, PlayStation's doing some dope shit over there. Maybe we can sort of bring some of those ideas into what we do over here. And I think not only does that make users more happy, but I think that gives players more of a reason to go back to maybe older titles or games that have already come out that did ship with those features. And then to have here on Kind of Funny Games Daily, a news release of like, hey, guess what? This game that you were really excited for at Xbox One that came out 2 years ago or whatever, or Xbox Series X that came out a year and a half ago, it now has whatever features on it, whatever things that they've added, whether it's the haptic feedback or the, you know, the adaptive triggers or whatever it is that they sort of want to kind of take inspiration from or just take those ideas, right? I think that's cool as hell. I think it's just really cool that he's very open about that sort of thing. And I don't really see what the sort of loss scenario is here. Like what could be the negative from this?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the thing. When we were talking to him yesterday, right? Like he was talking a lot about bespoke accessories, talked a little bit about VR and other things and how, you know, for Microsoft and Xbox, doing stuff like VR, doing stuff like Kinect, for example, was the big example, right? It's hard to keep that stuff up in a legacy way, and it's hard to support that stuff when it feels like it's ulterior to the main focus of, hey, we just want to have dope games on our system, and we want to treat those in a way where they're easy to bring forward, they're easy to support, they're easy to add features like FPS boost and all that other stuff. The controller updates for me is a thing that, you know, I could see them go either way in terms of if we go wildly different with the controller, it then becomes a thing of, cool, you know, if we backpedal on this feature, then what does that mean for legacy, right? If we add a touchpad to the Xbox controller and then decide a touchpad isn't worth it, how does that change our games going into the future? And I think, you know, I think that plays into somewhat of the conservative approach that they've played in terms of the dynamic upgrades going into next gen, where you have the Xbox One controller. I'm going to pull up my Outriders controller that I got from my Xbox Series X and my Xbox One, and basically is the Xbox One controller, but you know, you have the grooves on the bottom of it, you have an improved D-pad, you have the share button, you have the minor improvements that makes it feel better than the Xbox One controller that came before it, but it's not a crazy different thing. Whereas my Crimson Red DualSense, I'm going to bust out here, right? Like, this is a completely different controller from my PS4 controller. You know, I don't want to do the thing where I just list off features like, oh, you also got the Crimson Red.
I mean, it's not crimson.
It's fucking hot, though.
I wish it was hotter. I wish it was like the red Series X controller. This is like leaning more towards kind of like a pink. I don't know. We'll talk about it later.
I like it, man. I like it. But I don't necessarily love the color of the buttons.
I wish I would have gotten the black
just like
one.
Like a faded red.
Yeah.
I don't love that as much. But this is a totally different controller from my PS4 controller, right? Like the DualSense compared to the DualShock. Again, I don't want to sound like a Sony PR speak, but you have the haptic feedback, you have the adaptive triggers, you have you know, the redone light on the controller, you have the speaker, you have all these different things that turns it into a thing that you have to treat differently. And for Sony, I would say that counts as a risk. That counts as a big move. And if that doesn't work out, that's going to be something that you have to dedicate yourself to over the course of a generation. And then maybe next generation, that's when you backpedal, or that's when you change things up again. But that is a move that you have to measure. Is this worth it? Is it not worth it? And for Sony to be the ones that are like, cool, we're going to make the DualSense and we're just going to commit to it, and hopefully this is a forward-stepping move, I think for them that was a success overall. And that then gives Xbox the vision on their side to go, cool, we played it safe, but looking at what the other guys are doing, it seems like that is a success for them, and it seems like they are pushing it forward, so we should follow suit. We should now take the features that we like, right? Like, we're not going to make the DualSense necessarily, but maybe Xbox likes the haptic feedback. Maybe they like the adaptive triggers. Like, Xbox already has, they have some form of, I guess this trigger,
built-in battery, or...
Yeah, built-in battery. Like, things like that, where it's like, cool, we don't want to copy your swag one for one, but there are things here and there that we can learn and take, and you know, we can go into this future together knowing that there are things that are standardized now because y'all made it a thing that worked for your platform, which I think is a really cool thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you get to a point where, because this has, you know, been a success for Sony so far, that in the future this does become more of a standardized thing. And I don't think that Phil and the team, I don't think they would go overboard with the risks that they take. I see them maybe adding one or two features, but I don't see a new controller coming out and sort of changing and paving the way for a brand new Xbox. Like, I don't really see that happening. I think, because I think of the legacy things that you've just mentioned, where I think they might add, you know, better haptic feedback. I don't really know if we'll see adaptive triggers or anything like that. If they're going to add something, I think it would be a better sort of vibration feedback for the user to, you know, to feel those water droplets dropping on you when you're playing in Returnal,
yeah.
Even though you can't play Returnal on Xbox.
I think for sure we'll get that at some point with the Xbox controller, especially when you look at HD Rumble on the Switch. Like, it seems like that has been a push over the last few years, where the Switch kind of originated that HD Rumble. Sony now has the adaptive feedback, which feels like an iteration on that, or an innovation, whichever one you want to choose. And I could easily see Xbox going, cool, this is the new wave, we got to get on it. And that becomes a thing that everybody is now doing. As we're talking about this, I do want a poll in chat. Did you just turn on your PS5?
I didn't mean to, but I was going to do the snowback mic with the walkie-talkie thing. We could have we could get Xbox to add the microphone on their next controller, Phil Spencer, so that whenever you pop a trophy, you can record whatever is happening. Have you watched all your videos, by the way? All your trophy videos?
I usually don't go back and watch all of them. I've made it so that I'm only recording my gold and platinum trophies.
Okay, but you...
so every now and then I'll go back and watch them. Yeah.
But is your mic muted on your controller?
No. When I go back and when I capture any video, my mic isn't muted. I hear myself and I hate it.
Okay, got it. Because, I mean, this happened several. This happened at the launch of PS5, but I had played through all of Demon's Souls. And I had put up the playthrough on my YouTube channel. And then one of our viewers was watching my playthrough while playing Demon's Souls. And they popped a trophy and their microphone was on. And you could hear my playthrough in the background coming through on the microphone.
Really,
so they popped the trophy. And it's one of the areas in Demon's Souls. And I said, this place feels very Bloodborne-y. And it's making me blood horny. And that's all that pops through. So they commemorated their trophy by having just that line perfectly pop up on the microphone. It was so fucking perfect,
dude. It's hilarious. And I know I can turn it off, but I don't, because I often play games co-op or online with people. And if we have funny moments in the PlayStation party, I do want to be able to capture those and share those with their permission, because it's always a good thing. But it's that double-edged sword where while playing Ratchet & Clank 2016 a few months ago, I had a fucking dope-ass clip. And I clipped it, and legit, just heavy
watching
breathing.
Porn in the back.
No, man. No, I don't do that during Ratchet & Clank. That's not the appropriate game for that. I save that for when I'm playing
No, you don't need to say anything. Guilty Gear, okay.
Guilty Gear is my porn game. But, you know, it's the thing where I'm watching back a clip and you just hear heavy breathing and I'm like,
you
I can't
need
share
to say
that.
Anything.
We don't need a, yeah, we can end.
Well, you don't
want
to hear about my Guilty Gear habit?
I truly don't.
Oh, here's the thing, man. Guilty Gear, you got to be in the zone for it, all right?
Oh, okay.
When you want to be in the zone, you got to get the blood rushing to the right places, Andy.
So, like, when we talk about, like, oh, this is the perfect podcast game, like, oh, dude, this is the perfect game for porn. Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, got it. I hear you.
Just in the background, like you're not even paying attention to. You just have it on in the background, just as like a distraction.
It's like me with The Office back when it was on Netflix. It's just kind of on, you know.
This is on. It's just going.
It's comfort, you know.
I was mentioning this earlier in chat. If I can get a poll that is built-in batteries versus replaceable batteries, because I saw people going back and forth, and I want to know what the consensus is, because I see this argument a lot. And I personally prefer the DualSense with the rechargeable battery. That's where I go. I don't want to be buying double A's. I know I can buy rechargeable double A's, but who wants to do that? But I do want to know the consensus.
Because what happens is that I always end up just buying that battery pack for Xbox. And I made the mistake of buying like the really cheap generic ones from Amazon one time, and they were terrible, and they last, like, the battery lasted for maybe 30 minutes or so. I think the reason why I'm getting maybe more comfortable with it now on the PlayStation side was that the DualShock 4 I thought was just terrible with battery life. I never had any good luck. I know some people said, oh, my DualShock 4 was fine. I had like four or five DualShock 4s, and the batteries were always garbage. Mm-hmm. So I've always leaned more towards the rechargeable sort of portable ones, because I just felt like they had a longer lifespan overall. But now
that's the one
I feel
thing.
Like...
that I think that's the one thing for me where I totally get it. Where even the DualSense, the battery on the DualSense isn't amazing. You know, it runs out maybe every other day, maybe daily, depending on how much I'm gaming. It's not great, but I still prefer it over replaceable batteries.
Right.
But I might be a madman.
You are a madman.
Thank you. I want to bring in a question from BJ Bernardo, who wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, hey, y'all, you guys crushed that Phil Spencer interview. As newer guys to the Kind of Funny Games cast, how does it feel to have the Games cast interview on sites like Video Games Chronicle and GameSpot? Is it weird or is it super uber dope? Question about controllers. Do you think the Xbox should just take and improve the same features of the DualSense controllers, or can you think of something brand new to add to the Xbox controller? Thanks, BJ. Let's start with that first question, Andy. How did it feel to be interviewing Phil Spencer, and how did it feel also waking up this morning and seeing the headlines?
I was nervous. I tried not to act nervous, and I still somehow fumbled over my words, because I'll fumble over my words whether I'm nervous or not. So that happened. But I was definitely nervous, man. I mean, this is somebody that that I've sort of seen as like obviously a gigantic figure in the industry. So I was kind of nervous going into it. And then when we're sort of prepping for the show and he said something and he goes, pre-show jitters. And I was like, oh, Phil Spencer's nervous too. And then I think when the show gets started and we start saying our stupid lines and he's laughing, it's like, oh, Phil's down a clown. Let's rock. This is going to be great. It's going to be fun. And we had a great show. I thought it was just a really fun show.
Yeah.
As far as the headlines, I was telling Kevin that I accidentally woke up like at 6 a.m. and I was hungry and I was like, fuck, I'm going to have to eat something because I won't be able to fall back asleep. And I saw the tweets from VGC about Phil Spencer breaking some sort of news about a controller. And I was like, did the Gamescast come out already? wonder if that's from ours. And I had to click in and go, oh, shit, that was us. So that felt pretty neat. I don't know. I wasn't really expecting that. That's why I had done all the stupid Tim Schafer jokes leading into it, because I didn't really think that we were going to be doing anything that was going to have anything headline worthy. I thought we were just going to talk shop. Just a couple of bros.
That's the thing that surprised me as well. I was not expecting any headlines. Like I knew Phil Spencer had said some interesting things here and there that, you know, what was like not newsworthy, but like cool tidbits where, oh yeah, like I've not heard this anywhere else. But I wasn't necessarily expecting the headlines, you know, because I think we went in there with the mindset of, hey, yo, let's just fucking kick it with Phil. Let's have a good time. Like I was super nervous going in. And not even going in. Beforehand, I think I was fine. But it's when we actually started and when like I started asking questions where I was like, God, this is Phil Spencer. This is head of Xbox. My sister knows what Xbox is. I started having those thoughts and I was like, fuck, man, this is fucking wild. And I had that thing where, you know, I felt like I could feel during like one or two of my questions where I felt like my voice was shaky. I felt like I was stumbling over words. I couldn't figure out, like, I knew the question in my mind, but I couldn't phrase the question exactly as I wanted it coming out. And it was one of those things where after the episode, I was like, fuck, man, fucked it up. You know, like, I can't believe I can't believe I did that. Went to sleep, was super anxious about it, woke up, and I saw all the headlines, and I was like, I think that's the question I asked. I think this headline is breaking based off the question I asked, and that for me totally, I think, brought it back around to where I was like, all right, you know, it wasn't that bad. Like, if VGC is out here writing about it, it's probably fine.
Let's just talk more about ourselves for the rest of the show is what I'm voting for. I bet you, though, Blessing, I think we woke up and – or we, after that interview, were like, did we do well? Was that fun? Was he having a good time? And I think we're nervous about that. I think he's nervous waking up. I heard he couldn't sleep last night because he's like, God, I just did not play well in Bless Who. I was such a terrible performer in Bless Who.
Yeah. Embarrassing. Not great, man. Yeah,
embarrassing.
Not great. He'll be back, though. And when he comes back, I think he'll be back. He'll be ready. You know, I think now he knows the rules. Now he knows the game. And I don't think he's going to let that happen again. Phil Spencer seems like that kind of dude who comes back with a revenge. And so we're going to see that.
This poll is done, Bless.
Where are we at? Okay, so the poll, right now the poll is at, the finished poll is at 71% of people prefer the built-in battery with 155 votes. 63 people voted for replaceable. That's 29%. So there you have it. Built-in battery wins. I don't know how to. We also do have a very heavy PlayStation audience, but I'm sure that has nothing to do with it.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
Not at all. Not at all. Andy, we got more to talk about from this Phil Spencer interview with story number two. This is another one. Seeing old games do well on Game Pass absolutely incentivizes reboots, says Phil Spencer. This is once again Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Xbox Game Pass has given Microsoft more ammunition to justify rebooting older game franchises, the company's head of gaming has said. Xbox's subscription service currently gives its circa 20 million subscribers on-demand access to a large library of legacy games from the likes of Rare, Bethesda, Double Fine, and more. Speaking as part of the latest Kinda Funny Gamescast, Xbox boss Phil Spencer said that being able to track the popularity of older franchises made it easier to justify greenlighting new installments, such as the upcoming Fable reboot by Playground. Asked if player data for legacy games on Game Pass incentivizes the rebooting of franchises, Spencer said, quote, absolutely it does. Take Prey, which I think was an amazing game when it came out, but a lot of people missed. Seeing more people playing something like Prey or Dishonored or going back to Fable, for us, as we sit back as a creative organization and watch what people are interested in, it gives us more data to think about things that we might pick up and take forward with new ideas and new teams that might want to go do that, end quote. For me, this is one that I would have assumed, I would have guessed, but it's nice to hear it from Phil Spencer as well, where, hey man, you know, when you go back and play those backwards compatible games, or you go back and play legacy games on Game Pass, that matters to something, you know, that there is tracking in that, that there is data or data, however you say it, in that, where Microsoft developers, publishers see that, and that then can inform them. And I think that's another cool additional perk for Game Pass. We talk about Game Pass being this cool thing. We talk about it being the future of gaming. We talk about it being the best deal in gaming, but for it to be an additional way for developers to, and for Xbox specifically, to truly track what people have interest in years and years and years after a game has come out is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I think you're right on with, you know, it's great to actually hear him say it, which I think we've seen that before in the past with Sean Layden and PlayStation and them bringing back Crash, and how that was sort of like, you know, this really cool big moment that, hey, there's been movement on this game and yes, it is coming back or whatever. It is just great to hear it from like straight out of his mouth. That's like something that's really important, I think. Mm-hmm. Where I think back in the day, like, sure, there was data to be kept and stuff, but I think it was, you know, maybe it's the idea of just that buying used games was a bit harder to track what sort of older games were being purchased more and more. And maybe if an old game had a sort of resurgence in popularity, it may have been sort of hard to track that stuff. But when you're playing an old game on something like Xbox Game Pass, I think that's just easier for Microsoft to track that data as opposed to maybe like used game sales. I don't know. I feel like nowadays it's a bit easier to sort of track what is kind of getting hot once again. And we've seen it before, dude. Like we talk about Among Us being this 2-year-old game and then having this explosion of popularity and then becoming one of the biggest games in the world. You know, would that be done? Will that happen with any other franchises? I think we'll wait to see.
If you had the choice, what Xbox franchise would you want them to bring back?
Oh my God, Fusion Frenzy.
Oh my God. Out of all the games, Fusion Frenzy.
Fusion Frenzy, easy, dog, easy. No, when I think about Xbox franchises, it's weird because like I had the clear see-through green Halo Xbox, the collector's edition, the one that came with Halo 1, and that was basically my Halo machine. Like, I wasn't playing Jade Empire. I wasn't playing Perfect Dark. Like, I wasn't really playing any of those games on my 360 either, you know. I guess maybe KOTOR, but when I think of like an old sort of Xbox game. But, you know, what, hopefully the rumors on that are true with some sort of remake happening. Whether that, I mean, that won't be Xbox exclusive, but still be cool.
One thing I wanted to ask Phil Spencer, but I didn't have the balls in the moment. I felt like I needed to make my questions count, so I didn't ask this one. But I wanted to be like, so what are your thoughts on Jet Force Gemini? What are your thoughts on bringing back Jet Force Gemini? Because,
man.
Like, come on, man. That game, you can do cool things with that game.
Third that would have been shooter, great.
Alien ant creatures running around, like, you know, let me know, like, have you guys ever thought about Jet Force Gemini?
Dude, people love Risk of Rain. People loving this Arcade Ageddon. I mean, there's space in the world for a Jet Force Gemini reboot, bless, of some sort, with a really dope ass cell shaded art style. Jesus Christ. There's a place for it, bless. There's a place for it. What I wanted to talk about when we're talking about these bespoke hardware, and easily the most times I've heard the word bespoke in an hour span, like, I wanted to say, hey, dude, I liked my Kinect. So I failed you. Maybe I didn't preach the word of it enough. Did I use it for games? Fuck no. I used it for voice command all the damn time.
You used
time.
It to attach your YouTube to the corner.
No, man, I would just sit on my desk, like, do call, and I was in college for like game design and shit, and it was just it was my play Netflix, play whatever show, pause, play, like, that's what it was for me, and I used that shit all the time, and I was like one of 8 people that were really, really sad when they were doing away with it. And I tried doing the Cortana thing. I tried, you know, tying it to Google Now or whatever, to Google Voice, because that was one of the later updates that happened like 2 years ago, I think. It just wasn't. It's not the same, Bless. It's not the same.
I feel that. Two more for Xbox to bring back, because I know they're looking at the I get super self-conscious about data and data, because chat calls me out no matter which way I say it. So I'm just going to say data. I know Xbox looks at the data, and you must know. People love Conker and Banjo. Bring them back. At least one of them. Preferably both of them. But come on, man. I want a new Conker. I want a new Banjo.
It's got to be Banjo. It's got to be Banjo. There's I think, way more that you could do with that franchise nowadays. Unless you have, like, dude, or, oh, shit. Oh, my God. Oh, my God bless. Mm-hmm. The amount of times that Tim talks about we need Halo to be God of War, it's Conker.
Oh my God!
It's Conker.
We need
a reformed Conker to come back into the world,
Conker,
and be like, I'm tired of this over sexualization of stuff. Like, I'm a father now. Oh my gosh, that's it, Phil. I hope you're watching.
Phil. Get on it. Bring back Conker. Andy, let's talk about story number three: Battlefield 2042 crossplay has been confirmed. We did it, everybody. We did it. Round of applause. This comes from Joe Screbbles at IGN. EA has confirmed that Battlefield 2042 will feature crossplay, although not all platforms will be able to play with all others. Crossplay was confirmed in a new Battlefield briefing, but EA made it clear that there will be two pools of players rather than one single mixed group. You're going to have PC, Xbox Series X/S, and PS5 players all playing together. PC and console players can opt out of crossplay if they want to. And then you're going to have Xbox One and PS4 players playing together. The reasoning for the player separation comes down to the differences between new-gen and last-gen versions of Battlefield 2042. More modern platforms will see 128-player matches, while last-gen consoles will only extend to 64-player matches. We also learned that map sizes will be different across last-gen and new-gen versions of the game. EA also has confirmed that the game will feature cross-progression and cross-commerce. Any unlocks or purchases made in any version of the game, including last-gen to new-gen, will appear in all other versions of the game. Get hyped, Andy.
Wait, okay, so cross-progression, blessing, let's say I'm playing on my PS5.
Yes.
I have that same account on my PC? Or yes. Are they saying cross-progression in between PS4 and PS5?
I believe it's cross progression no matter where you're at.
No matter where
and
you're
so
at.
So you can if you're playing on PC, you can hop on your Xbox One and then into your Xbox Series X no matter what, and it's going to work. From how this is written, that's how I take
right.
it. Kindoffunny.com/ you're wrong if there is confirmation that actually, no, it's just certain platforms. But it seems like you can have cross progression everywhere.
That's interesting. Which is good. I'm interested in sort of the angle that they're taking with the 128-player matches for new gen and 64-player matches for old gen. And I wonder what the discussions there were. Like, obviously, you're splitting up kind of a big player base, right? If you're not going to have Xbox One being able to play with Xbox Series X. But, like, was there any thought? I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, like, being in the meeting room of, hey, there's not a whole lot of players that are actually on PS5 and Series X. Is this a good idea? Should we let them play with? Should we let them play in 64 player matches as well with the old gen? You know, that's kind of like, because what are the odds that somebody with a PS5 has hella friends with PS5s as well? Like amongst us, sure, but there's got to be a lot of people still out there with old gen hardware that are like, oh damn, I can't play with you because you were the one friend that got the PS5. Like that sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the helpful thing about PC being looped in with Series X and PS5 is that PC, the player base there is probably going to be sizable enough that you're going to have a good player base. And then you also get into that back and forth of, all right, we want to take advantage of the new gen consoles. We want the PS5 and Xbox Series S or X to have justification on why they're better and why they exist. And maybe even for them, possibly double dip if people are getting the game on PS4 and Xbox One, and then a year later they get their next gen consoles.
Sure.
And instead of playing it backwards compatible, they have an actual reason to get the next gen version of the game because you're going to have bigger lobbies and bigger maps. I think it's a combination of those things where they're like, cool, in the long run, this is going to work out for us because people are going to double dip. People are going to eventually show up in the PS5 and Xbox Series X lobbies in greater numbers. And in the meantime, even for the comparable smaller amount of players that will be playing on those consoles, like it's Battlefield, and at launch you're gonna have enough players I think on each individual platform to where it's not as much of a problem. And then by the time you actually get there later on where player numbers might dip, you then have it so that way more people have access to PS5s and Xbox Series X's, and via crossplay, you know, it all works out on its own. I think that's the thought process.
They should have had another mode of like Xbox One and PS4. You can play in 128 player matches, just no tornadoes. That's just too much.
You guys
that's
just don't much. See the tornadoes. They're there, but you guys just can't see them.
Because
the visual effects are too much.
You'll see your friends fly.
You got to guess where the fuck the tornado's going to come through. Yeah, I think this is best case scenario, I think, for what they're going for here, right? Like, hey, we want to take advantage of this shit. We want crossplay. We want all this to work together. But because of the advantages we want to have, we got to divide it up in this way. And the fact that it seems like there are only two pools when it comes to crossplay, I think that's fine. If it was like four or five pools, if it was like PC players had to play that on themselves, new gen play by themselves, Xbox One and PS4 play by yourself, and it gets into this weird thing of, oh shit, like it's all segmented anyway, why even have crossplay in the first place? Then I think it's a problem. I think two pools is fine. It's fine. You know, there's probably a world where they could have done it to where PS5 players and Xbox Series X players lower their pools to 64 players, and they are playing on the smaller size maps. But for them, they're probably like, no, this isn't along the lines of the vision that we have for this game. And we want to make sure that whoever's playing on new gen gets that quote unquote next gen experience that they probably really want to incentivize, because that's been the big marketing push, the 128 players, the bigger maps, the big tech moves that they're making. I think that's the thing that they really want to nail down in this game. And so
Nanobiologist also put this article in chat, kind of, you know, reiterating what we had just said. But I am really excited about this technical demo, this playtest that's happening later in summer, which was, I guess, delayed from July. Yesterday on stream, we played Battlefield 4 with Bruce Green. Me and Nick, Snowback Mike, played with Bruce Green. And I was telling Mike, this is like the most time I've spent probably in a Battlefield multiplayer, because I always just played the single player campaigns. I played Battlefield 1, the World War 1 version of it, and I had a lot of fun with that. And I was just more about those little player vignettes, you know? Mm-hmm. But the multiplayer, at that time, I was more of a Destiny guy. When Battlefield 4 was out, I was more of Call of Duty and Halo and all that sort of stuff. But I had a lot of fun with it. It was frustrating at first because it's a different experience, and it's not what I was expecting, and I spawn and get killed by a helicopter or whatever. And eventually Bruce Green was like, it's not about kills or dying or whatever. Like, you're just going to respawn. Who gives a shit? It's about capturing these points. We got to work as a team. And that's when I like kind of fell in line. I was like, all right, let's fucking do this shit. It was a lot of fun. I had a blast with it, and I can't wait for 2042.
Honestly, I also can't wait for 2042. That'll be the first Battlefield game that I try to actually get invested in, because I've always been in the Call of Duty versus Battlefield back and forth. I've always been on the Call of Duty side of things, just because my friends played Call of Duty and I enjoyed Call of Duty a lot. But I think playing Battle Royale over the last 4 years has set me up to where I look at something like 128 player lobbies, and that has become a thing that has excited me in a way that that's never been a bullet point that I've cared about in the past. I've never been one to really care about large player pools, but you know, them saying 128 players, us seeing the environmental stuff, the tornadoes, all the crazy shit going on in a match nowadays is exciting for me as somebody who now likes games like Apex and Fortnite and other games with huge lobbies and crazy shit going on. And so I'm into it. Can't wait for it. Another game I can't wait for, Andy Cortez, is Zelda Skyward Sword HD. This is story number 4. We got a review roundup. Right now on Metacritic, it's sitting at an 82. On Open Critic, it's sitting at an 83. I'm going to pull a few reviews in. I'm starting off with PJ O'Reilly at Nintendo Life, who gave it a 9 out of 10 and said this: The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword HD introduces a raft of technical improvements and quality of life updates that reinvigorate and revitalize this 10-year-old game. With motion controls more precise than ever, an alternate button control scheme that totally works, crisp HD graphics, smooth 60 FPS gameplay, and a bothersome sidekick who's been streamlined into something altogether more useful, this really does feel like Skyward Sword as it was meant to be experienced. Yes, the locking off of instant travel behind the official amiibo is a misstep, but beyond this one issue, what's here is a sublime experience, a technical triumph, and an absolute must-play for Switch owners and Zelda fans. fans. Chris Scolian at VGC gave it 5 stars and said, Skyward Sword HD is a superb remaster of the decade-old Wii game that not only gives it a much-needed visual upgrade, but also throws in so many quality-of-life improvements, not least of all, a free camera, that it immediately makes this original version obsolete. And then Kevin Nezevic at GameSpot gave it a 7 out of 10 and said, the various quality of life tweaks that Nintendo has implemented here, welcome as they are, don't fix Skyward Sword's biggest issues, and it remains the most uneven 3D entry in the Zelda series. Even so, the improvements in the Switch remaster make the overall experience more enjoyable, and the characteristic Zelda magic ultimately outshines the game's faults. I believe Barrett Courtney has been playing this game for Kinda Funny. He's going to, right after this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily, on the Twitch stream that's going down right after this, that's going up later on Kinda Funny Plays, he's starting off that stream with a little bit of Skyward Sword gameplay and giving his thoughts as well.
It's still embargoed, but I think he's going to play like about an hour of it, I believe.
Exactly. Yeah, it seems like this game is getting mixed reviews on the higher end. Like, the kind of mixed reviews that you probably want for this kind of game. Whereas a remaster, it seems like some of the legacy issues still exist in terms of what the game is. And, like, if you like the game or don't like the game, it's the same game. But if you're looking for that same game with a lot of the stuff streamlined and a lot of the stuff, like, a lot of the quality of life stuff implemented, then you're going to have a great time. That seems to be the takeaway from here.
It was so interesting on Twitter seeing Gene Park from Washington Post mention, holy crap, there's a camera. You can use the right stick for the camera. And it had never occurred to me that the original one didn't have a camera. I had never thought that there was sort of this locked view. And I'm not sure how the camera even worked then.
Dude, it was the Wii, right? And so, like,
yeah.
I don't remember how the camera worked in Twilight Princess or in Skyward Sword. I do remember in Twilight Princess, I think you held the C button and then moved around the stick, and the camera wasn't free, but I believe you did have some control, but it wasn't great. I imagine it being on the Switch, they probably, them having that dual stick setup where they can actually make that work, I'm sure that's what it is. And that's wild to me.
What kind of disappointed me about this, about reading sort of what people are thinking about it, was that I was looking forward to using the right stick as a slash. Seeing that sort of thing being implemented kind of excited me because I don't want to do motion controls. And then it occurred to me, oh, the right stick, I can't use the camera if that's what the right stick is for. And then I found out that when you hold the L button, the right stick then moves the camera, which is kind of an interesting. Oh, we have Barrett in the chat.
Yeah, Barrett, let us know. How does this camera work?
So in Skyward Sword, the original version, there was no moving around the camera. It was auto follow. Which, like, for a lot of, like, 3D Zelda games, like, up until then, like, that was kind of the standard of, like, you'd have your auto-targeting button to, like, kind of help move the camera around. With Skyward Sword, yeah, like, what Andy is saying, like, you hold whatever it's called on LB or whatever.
QR or something.
Whatever it is on Switch. And then holding that down, you can use the right stick to move the camera around. And for like how Skyward Sword is designed, which is, you know, I feel like a simpler version of a lot of the classic 3D Zelda games, I've never run into any problems with it. Like, yeah, you're holding down a button, but like for me personally, like, I don't mind that. And so, like, once you get into combat, like, you're not like, I'm never in a situation where I'm like, oh man, I need to be using my sword and using the free flow camera at the same time. Like, I think they did a pretty good job of handling that situation. So even though it sounds like a hassle, Andy, I don't think it's as big of one, like, when you actually play it. Like, I can understand hearing about it. You're like, oh, that's kind of lame. But I personally don't think it's a big deal.
I guess the same methodology is there of taking your thumb off of the attack button to move the camera. Like, I think I get the same kind of thing when you think about it. Yeah. What did you primarily use? Control scheme. Control. Did you use motion? Oh,
no, I turned all motion controls off, which is an option. So I'm just doing pro controller, or if I'm playing handheld, just on a handheld. And I'm really enjoying that.
And the slashes feel good, those sort of directional slashes.
I'll shout out the IGN reviewer. Hold on, I want to pull up. I had actually screenshotted because I thought this was a good quote from him. This is Travis Northup, who's doing the review in progress for Skyward Sword. Where was the quote? On top of that, the way the stick has to be moved makes sense on paper, but can be a little counterintuitive in practice. For example, if an enemy is guarding to your right, my instincts tell me to input toward the left to hit his unguarded side. But flicking the stick to the left swings my sword from right to left and immediately gets blocked. Like playing with an inverted camera, in order to hit the enemy, I have to do the opposite of what my instinct naturally wants to do. So yeah, like, it honestly, like, getting into like those fights and fighting bokoblins, which are the bane of my existence in Skyward Sword, because the way they block is infuriating. It gets like a little, I've had to like kind of train myself of like, okay, if they're blocking to my right, I have to flick the stick right and not left, because it is kind of weird, and I don't think we can go into the options once we start this stream to see if there's any way to change that. I don't think there is. We'll get into the nitty-gritty once the stream starts, and if you can't make it, of course you can watch it later, youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays.
Hell yeah. Cool. Go check out that stream right after this if you're watching this live, but for now you can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad free but if you're listening to this part of the show, that means that you didn't. And so here are some ads. This podcast is brought to you by DoorDash. Did you forget that one thing at the store? Now you can get snacks, drinks, and household essentials in 30 minutes with DoorDash. Get drinks, snacks, and other household items delivered in under an hour. With over 300,000 partners in the US, Puerto Rico, Australia, and now Canada, you can support your neighborhood go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Popeyes, Chipotle, and Cheesecake Factory. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code GAMES2021. For our Canadian listeners, use code GAMESCA. That's 25% off, up to $10 in value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code GAMES2021. In the US, and GAMESCA in Canada. Don't forget, that's code GAMES2021 or GAMESCA for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. We're also brought to you by Full Sail University. We know that you love video games, but have you ever considered making them? If so, then I want to tell you about Full Sail University, which offers a variety of gaming degree programs on campus and online that can teach you the tools, technology, and workflow used by today's gaming studios. You can learn level design, programming, character modeling, production, and more. Graduates from Full Sail have worked on awesome games like Grand Theft Auto V, the Call of Duty series, Rocket League, and many more. Full Sail has degrees available in game development, game design, and game art, as well as many other degrees in entertainment and media. To learn more about Full Sail's programs, as well as potential scholarship opportunities, visit fullsail.edu/funnygames. That's fullsail.edu/funnygames. Last but not least, we're brought to you by Omen Oasis. Sick of all the randos sliding into your team chat whenever you and your friends are grouped up in your favorite games? I know I am. I play Knockout City a lot. Then you need your own private oasis, your own paradise in the, let's admit it, wasteland that can be online gaming. Oasis is a free and easy to use add-on for Omen Gaming Hub that creates a virtual room for you and up to 15 of your friends for private gaming and watch parties. But Oasis isn't just any virtual room. With low latency, 720p, 30fps screen sharing, and seamless audio quality, you can quit worrying about technical difficulties, stop arguing over who has the worst internet connection, and get to playing. Play together, watch together, chat together, share together, all with Oasis by Omen. Go to bit.ly/OasisKF to download Oasis on the Omen Gaming Hub and try out the beta now. Story number 5, Halo Infinite's multiplayer will feature a ping system. This is from Windows Central. 343 Industries lead multiplayer designer Andrew Witz has recently confirmed that Halo Infinite will have a ping system in an employee spotlight blog post. Specifically, this system we called the Mark system, and will enable players to mark areas of interest on maps for their teammates. Quote, "My team also gets to work on awesome multiplayer systems like the Mark system, which is a feature where players can mark a spot in the world that lets their teammates know vital information like an enemy position or weapon location," said Witz. So it's a short one for you there, but I think we're talking about, just because every first person shooter, every multiplayer game, you know, give us a ping system. Ping system, amazing system. Apex Legends
based Apex
paved the way for greatness when they added their ping system, and I can't get enough of a ping system in a first person shooter.
Yeah, it's absolutely needed. And there are still a few games that I've gone out there. I think when we went back to play Halo Master Chief, and I'm playing with Mike and Nick, and I realized, oh, shit, I can't. I just have to kind of call out behind us. You know, like there's no real good way to sort of communicate that. So, yeah, shout out Apex. Thank you very, very much, Respawn. Yeah.
I also want to shout out that article was written by Brendan Lowry. I missed out on the name when I read the headline. But yeah, I'm super excited for Halo Infinite. Similar thing as Battlefield 2042, where I'm not a Battlefield person. What was that, Kevin?
I just said his last name because it sounded like the last
Mike
name.
Lowry.
Mike Lowry. Yeah. I heard it and I was like, I hope that's what it was. Because yeah, I had the exact same thought. Brendan Lowry. But yeah, like I've not been a huge Halo person, right? Like I've had friends that have liked Halo and I'll always go over to their house and get my ass beat. And I was like, I don't think this game is for me. But, you know, watching that Halo stream with you guys during E3 week and seeing them do the gameplay breakdown, showing off all the features, showing off like, hey, yeah, we're thinking about new players too and all this stuff. Super excited to see how this pans out. Super excited to get in there and super, super excited to use the mark system. Go get them. Story number 6, NBA 2K22 has its cover athletes, and this time around there's an interesting twist. This is Samit Sarkar at Polygon. NBA 2K22 is scheduled to launch worldwide on September 10th with 6 different cover athletes across 4 editions of the game, led by Dallas Mavericks star Luka Doncic. Is that how I say it, Andy?
Doncic.
Luka Doncic, publisher 2K Sports, announced on Wednesday. Doncic, a 2-time NBA All-Star in his 3 seasons in the league, will grace the cover of NBA 2K22's standard edition. It's fucking wild thinking about the fact that we're in 22.
I hate
22.
It.
22.
Not a fan.
How the fuck did time fly? The standard edition and cross-gen digital bundle. The background of the standard edition features artwork of a shouting Doncic, draped in thick brushstrokes of blue, white, and red, a nod to the flag of his native country, Slovenia. A third version of NBA 2K22 is a history-making one. 2K Sports is marking a milestone year for the WNBA with the WNBA 25th Anniversary Special Edition of NBA 2K22. Its cover will feature Candace Parker of the Chicago Sky, the first woman athlete cover athlete in NBA 2K history. Quote, representation matters, so this is a special moment of progress for the sport and for the series, Parker said in a statement. Quote, to be part of this historic cover is a testament to the growth and rising popularity of the women's game, and I'm proud to be the first female cover athlete to be the face of NBA 2K, end quote. That's awesome. That's really cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I hadn't realized it hadn't happened yet. I knew that there were prior games with WNBA athletes, but I wasn't sure what the cover art situation was. And there's also a third cover, which is the one that has, I believe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Dirk Nowitzki and Kevin Durant, all 3 on one. And I don't understand what the sort of rhyme or reasoning is for the third one. I should probably look into that, but I believe that it's just sort of an alternate look at whatever it is. There probably
is
some
like
sort of edition.
Edition.
Yeah.
You gotta imagine. That's awesome. I'm always I always like paying a little bit of attention to the cover athletes over the years of games because, in a weird way, it's meant so much to the franchises in a way where, like, I know what the Madden curse is. I'm not a big Madden person at all. I'm not a big football person at all, but I'm aware of what the Madden curse is. I'm aware of, like, whenever they announce who the new cover athletes are, like, that's a thing that kind of transcends gaming news and just, you know, gets into sports news in general, and I always think it's an exciting thing. And so, you know, shout out Candace Parker being on the cover for this version. I think that's a really cool thing. And shout out to NBA 2K. Fix her online, though, because I heard that's not that great.
No, not great.
Yeah, fix it, because I want to get in there. I want to play some online matches. Let's round out with story number 7. This is a fun one. Hideo Kojima handed out flyers to sell his first Metal Gear game. This is John Walker at Kotaku.
Had like a street team.
He was like trying to sell it like it was a mixtape. He was like, hey bro, trust me, it's gonna be fire. He would hand you the flyer and then like ask for money after.
Like, nah, I'm good.
It's like, no, take it back. Last night Hideo Kojima, seemingly in a reflective mood on his prolific Twitter account, told a couple of gorgeous mini tales on the lengths he went to in order to help sell his earliest games like Metal Gear. These included handing out flyers and cranking up in-store demo volumes. The idea of Kojima having to do anything at all to ship copies of a Metal Gear game seems so incredibly improbable in 2021 that it was a complete revelation to see the series director explain his hands-on approach at his local store. Quote, in the summer of my 23rd year, my first game, Metal Gear, was released. Since it was not on NES, there were no TV ads, and it was not sold in the toy section, which was very crowded at the time. Since it was MSX, it was quietly placed in the PC software section of an electronics shop, end quote. The MSX and MSX2 were home computers produced by Sony, primarily bought in Japan, running a version of Microsoft's DOS. Metal Gear was released on MSX in July 1988, 5 months before its Famicom port, and as such received less attention in Japanese stores. Quote, even so, I went to the store every day, got flyers, and handed them out to people around me. I also bought 3 copies of the software myself, end quote. A fun story. I absolutely love it. I adore the idea of Hideo Kojima on the streets really trying to work to sell Metal Gear, which, like the article mentions, is a thing that you would never imagine nowadays, because you just say the words Metal Gear and people are like, yo, whatever it is, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to put a Metal Gear pachinko machine. Why not? Like, you can brand anything Metal Gear nowadays and people would show up for it. And so it's fun to hear him talk about humble beginnings.
That story just kind of like, it really puts you in a place in time, because you've heard so many stories of musical artists going to record shops and being like, hey, can you sell my CD? And then being like, all right, sure, yeah, give us those 5 copies or whatever. And they're like, dude, they fill out the shelves. Like, do you have any more or whatever? Like, even my Richard Garriott, man who created Ultima, like the first game he made was a Calibeth, and he worked at a PC shop, and they're like, I think the store owner was like, yeah, go ahead and sell it here if you want. And that people just kept on buying it. And it was like, oh, shit, I need to make more copies of this game. And it just like, I can't even imagine how that looks. I can't visualize what a young Kojima trying to sell Metal Gear on MSX looks like. It's so wild to think about. It's crazy.
It legitimately reminds me of mixtape rap, right? Like, it reminds me of the story of J. Cole talking about how he had to convince his landlord to let him stay in his place for free for a year and promise that he would pay the money back once he got famous. It feels like that, where Hideo Kojima is like, hey man, if you give me one shot, like it's Lose Yourself by Eminem, right? Like, give me one shot to do this, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna dedicate myself. I'm gonna do all the things. I'm gonna sell my mixtapes on the street. I'm gonna get big. And it turned out well for him.
That needs Hideo to be a Kojima, movie.
Nowadays, making some... Dude, I would watch the hell out of that movie. The Hideo Kojima biopic. Who would play him, though?
I have no idea.
I want to see.
I think we need a bunch of executives to, or a bunch of people in the industry. There is a movie. Kevin, who's the artist who he sings like this and he has a guitar? Who's that artist? Music artist? Bob Dylan. There's a movie about Bob Dylan where a bunch of different actors of like all races and genders play Bob Dylan, and it's just little snippets of his life. We need to do that. I think we all need to recreate.
But it's all the actors that Hideo Kojima is obsessed with. And so you get Norman Reedus in there, you get Mads Mikkelsen in there, you get a bunch of actors that have been in Metal Gear games. Get
Troy Baker.
Get David Hayter in there. Yeah, get Troy Baker in there. Make it happen. That'd be fucking amazing. But Andy, that biopic is probably just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got 3D Air Hockey for Switch.
Fuck
Induction
yeah.
for Switch. Dream, are you going to play that 3D Air Hockey?
Fuck no.
We got Dream Engine's Nomad Cities for PC, Skydrome so for PC.
I'm sorry.
somebody like worked really hard on 3D.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
It's okay, man. Such Art, Genius Art Simulator for PC. I'm not gonna play it either. Space Punks is now in early access on PC exclusively on Epic Game Store. And then Total Warhammer 2, The Silence and the Fury DLC is out now. New dates for you. Dungeon Defenders Awakened gets a new Nintendo Switch release and a major update for PC and Xbox on August 4th. Crash Bandicoot On the Run Season 4, Survival of the Fastest, launches on July 15th. Button City arrives on August 10th on PS5, Xbox, Switch, PC, and Mac. And then Hanako, Honor, and Blade will launch on Steam September 15th. Andy, folks can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where they can write in with their questions. They can avoid the ads, but they can also write in with their squad ups, just like Joshy G did. Joshy G writes in with a squad up on PC/PlayStation and says, Final Fantasy 14, I just finished A Realm Reborn. I've moved on to Heavensward. Looking for any kind of funny best friends who want to run dungeons and do alliance raids together. I'm on Crystal Server/Goblin. You can play with Joshy G with the username Ranulf Satarna. That is Randolph space Satarna. That will be in the description for people who want to look that up because it has very interesting spelling. But if you want to play,
I like that Joshy G. I like
a really cool name.
When I played WoW, like I wasn't naming myself the fucking, you know, weed smoker or like super gamer or Dallas Cowboys. No, Kevin, I went full in. I think I was like Aurelius, because I was an elf, and that's just like a cool sounding name. Like I have to be in it. Bless, I can't name my guy Cortez, fucking football player or some shit. Like, no, I can't do that shit.
You're dude. Better man than me,
Ranulf Satarna. I respect you.
You're a way better man than me because when I booted up Final Fantasy 14 years ago to try it out, I'm pretty sure I named my character Blessing Jr. I'm pretty sure I was just walking around.
Can't do it.
Named Blessing Jr. Role playing, doing all this stuff. That wasn't a fantasy name. I'll do better next time. Of course, you can go over to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong so you can help us do better right now. That's where you write in with things that we got wrong, things that we can correct for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. And let's see here.
Oh, I was also Arendelle, but I spelled it Ehrendel. And I was like, dude, I'm the coolest fucking night elf ever. The coolest night elf.
Nanobologist writes in to say, cross progression, and this is talking about Battlefield 2042. Cross progression is on PS5, Series X, and PC. Crossplay is between PS5, Series X, and PC. Then there's crossplay between PS4 and Xbox One because of lobby size differences. No cross-gen play.
Right. Correct.
Hold on. I want to look back at the article because it seems like that.
No, I read it. Yeah, it was like it was no cross-gen play, like PS4, no PS5.
But is there no cross-progression on PS4 and Xbox One? That's the thing that's tripping me up from Nanobiologist.
Hold on. It did say gen-to-gen progression, like with that upgrade.
EA also confirmed that the game will feature cross-progression and cross-commerce. Any unlocks or purchases made in any version of the game, including last-gen to new-gen, will appear in all other versions of the game. So I'm going to have to push back on you, Nano, on that. I think it seems like it is all versions of the game, unless you can provide a source. Oh, well, he did provide a source. Hold on. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
While you're getting to the bottom of that, I'm clicking on the Evo Twitch channel, and they're playing a Gundam fighting game on Evo. Which is pretty cool.
A gun fighting game?
A Gundam fighting game.
Oh. Wait, what's it called? That sounds
Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme versus Maxi Boost On. That's the full name.
All right, so here on Polygon it says, players who expect to play across multiple platforms also got some good news today. DICE says it's building cross-progression and cross-commerce for Battlefield 2042, which will be shared across all platforms. Okay, so again, yeah. I think Nano might have just forgot to include Xbox One and PS4 here. But cool. We got to the bottom of it. You can progress through all platforms. Mm-hmm. You're all good. Let's see. Somebody tried to... The Stickler wrote in to say Biopic is pronounced Biopic. Yes. Mispronounced that.
No. But... You're not mispronouncing it. It's either way. Just like data and data.
Data and legitimate, data. Yeah, we've had this discussion before, way. I think.
I mean, one way sounds stupid, you know?
I mean, I think me and Kevin actually had a back and forth about this on an old morning show a long ass time ago.
I don't know. Biopic.
Biopic. Because biopic sounds medical.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Right. Yeah. And we looked it up. We had this conversation. We looked it up. And biopic isn't anything medical.
No, it's the same
thing.
But
it just sounds that way.
Biopic.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Biopic.
The rest of this week's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily are tomorrow. You're getting Greg and Tim at a special time. Kinda Funny Games Daily is going down noon Pacific time tomorrow. We're going to stream a little bit of RE8 before that. And so when you tune in, get ready for that. On Friday, it's Greg and me. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is some Zelda Skyward Sword with Barrett, followed by Greg saving Coco in Monster Hunter Stories. So get hyped for that. Of course, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.
Until.